Hey everyone, it's Travis.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is the Wheat and the Chaff. Thanks for hanging out, tuning in as we continue our safe practice of podcasting.
Because honestly, what else do you have to do?
What else do we have to do except make podcasts from a very safe social distance? So, go ahead.
You know what I miss?
What's that?
I miss sports.
Yes.
I miss sports. And like the NFL draft was just recently, and it was like a little tease. I did find some enjoyment in the Packers draft.
Oh.
And I was like,
we have to talk about this. Because
I was like, this is amazing. Because they traded up for a quarterback.
And they
got another 250-pound running back who's going to be hanging out at McDonald's all the time.
Yeah.
And
it's the return of Eddie Lacy.
It is the return. It is the second coming.
Eddie Cheeseburger Lacy is back.
It is Eddie Lacy 2.0. And I can't wait to see it.
It's an interesting draft, right? We don't always kick off with the draft, but this case we're going to because, on one hand, I'm tired of talking about anything virus-related on any level.
And we want to talk about sports.
And we want to talk about sports, darn it. But here's what I found interesting about it is, you know, last year, if you don't follow the Green Bay Packers, there was some... there was some back and forth as to the dynamics between the new coach from last year and, of course, their franchise star quarterback Aaron Rodgers as to how those two would get along because of the philosophy of the new coach versus what Aaron has been doing for the past, 14 years. It seemed to even out. It seemed to work just fine because they made it one game before the Super Bowl, right? Like, they made it to the championship. So, like, on one hand, you go, hey, you went 13-3. You made it to the NFC championship. You guys must have gotten at least something ironed out and working. And then they went and made this draft.
And
it's basically a draft that looks at Aaron Rodgers and extends the middle finger of unfellowship,
I
guess.
Not just one, it's two.
It might be both middle fingers. Because it was basically like, oh, hey, Aaron, you know those things that you really could have used last year, like wide receivers or a tight end who could catch a ball? Yeah, we're not going to draft any of them. Actually, we're going to draft a quarterback.
We're going to trade up
a quarterback. Not a great quarterback. We're going to draft a project quarterback. So it's not even like a quarterback where you can be like, oh, this dude's rock solid. If Aaron goes down, because Aaron's had a few seasons now where something is tweaked and so he's not been there. So it's like, okay, this is not, you know, hey, this is a surefire, you know, top level quarterback who, if Aaron goes down, you know, he might be able to manage a couple of games and get us, let's say, you know, 2 wins out of 3 games or something like that, right? Like, he might be able to go 2-1 or something. Like, no. It's a complete and total I'm not against the guy, but he's a project.
Yes.
He is like he's probably a good 2-3 year project.
He's basically they're basically telling Aaron Rodgers, hey, you're Brett Favre now.
Yes!
And we need you to spend the last couple years of your contract, what's remaining on it,
trying to mentor the rookie.
We need the next Aaron Rodgers to come along.
And remember what Brett Favre said to that?
He didn't like it.
He did not like that. He was like, that's not my job, and I won't do it. Your job.
And then that's what Aaron Rodgers
did. And
then
not long after that, Brett Favre was a Jet.
So,
which leads me to this one thought. Completely and totally, I think I'm spinning stuff that will never happen. I don't think the money is possible. I don't think that the teams involved would actually do it. I don't think that the Packers themselves could make it happen without just eating a ton of cash. But Rodgers wouldn't look bad in a Patriots uniform.
It would never happen.
It would never happen. He's too old. I don't think Belichick would go for it.
And
the Packers, I think, are too salary bound to him at least until 2021, to where I think if they did anything before the next two seasons, I think they basically would just sink financially. But
Belichick,
it is that kind of thing where you sit there and you realize, like, but what could happen is if Aaron hits free agency in the next year or two, because I think he's due free agency at the end of 2021 season, you could end up having a Tom Brady, Brett Favre, Joe Montana, you know, kind of the circle continues where you might have a player who's got 2 or 3 years left in him, but just between, you know, draft choices, mm-hmm. organizational decisions, value and respect from amongst, you know, your organization, they end up playing elsewhere.
I'm going to say that.
I mean, dare I say Aaron Rodgers could be a Bear? Which case, what would you react?
No thanks.
That's right, because you're really hoping that other dude really lights it up this season. What dude is that?
It doesn't matter.
It wasn't the dude you drafted, though, and that's what...
Nick Foles. Hey, he beat Brady and Belichick in the Super Bowl.
That's a good point.
Just saying.
That's a good point.
Just saying.
But so, yes, sports on any level would be good. I miss baseball. I realize, you know, I don't realize, I'm not an avid baseball follower in the sense that I don't watch every game or like, you know, I'm not the kind of person who's like, oh, you know, I've been watching all the Grapefruit League or anything like that, yeah, right? Yeah. But I always usually watch opening day or at least have the game on, you know, even if it's just a opening day, an opening day game. And then usually three or four times a week, the game will either be on my computer or on the TV. Like, just the sound of the game. Like, even if I'm not, like, sitting down watching it.
I usually have it sitting on my iPad.
Yeah, it's like, at least there's somewhere in my home, the game is playing. Yes. Any game. Because, like, baseball to me is, like, one of those kind of games where there's a couple teams I really, really love. And then I just like the sound of the game happening. Mm-hmm. You know? I like the sound of the announcers. I like, it's one of those games where, because it's not timed, the pace of it is kind of like, you can just put it on as background noise.
Yep.
And just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then when a big play happens, you can check it out. And then you go back to like the vast majority of the game, which is not big plays happening. I've realized I do miss it because I put on a baseball game. I think one of our one of the local channels was like streaming classic games. And I put it on and I was like, oh.
Yes. I did read that baseball is planning on, or they're shooting for end of June to start a season, if and latest would be like July 2nd. And what they're going to do is they're going to have three divisions of 10 teams. And they're going to go...
How many teams are there in general? 30?
30.
Okay.
And so they're going to do three divisions. There's not like an American League and National League. It's three divisions of 10 teams. And they're going to do this
condensed season with a...
Kind of expanded playoff. And
expanded playoff bracket.
And then World Series in November. And
interesting.
So it'll be interesting to see how that all works. And they'll only do it in three cities. So they'll only use like three parks for now. They might expand it if things start opening up again. But
that's a heavy rotation on those parks.
It's a very heavy rotation, and I don't know if they're going to do fans or whatever. But
interesting. Yeah, it's like, so I mean, you saw the soccer games that were being played with no fans involved.
Yeah, it's going
to
be an interesting
thing. That's got to change the dynamic. If you're a professional sports person, I mean, you're there to play the sport, but there's still got to be an element of that kind of like hype of the crowd of, you know, people either cheering or jeering for you, right? Like, I mean, there's something to be kind of fed off of that if you're yeah. you know, even if you're an athlete. Because, I mean, you know, I'm not an athlete. I don't play sports, but I do a lot of stuff that's up front. You do a lot of stuff that's up front, right? Like, so we're both like public people in that sense, yeah. right? Like, there is something, you're probably experiencing this. I know I experience this right now. There's something way different between preaching with people in the room and versus preaching to a camera.
Yes, it is. Because you don't get the interaction. You don't get the facial expression.
You don't know what part of what you're saying is actually connecting. Because like, you can see it when you say something, and it doesn't even have to be one of those statements that you think is actually all that brilliant, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right? But you can see it hit somebody, and you go, oh, that landed. Or that didn't land.
And all your jokes suck. Nobody laughs.
It's like watching the worst documentary ever because you just keep throwing them out there and it's just dead silence.
And I'll throw this one.
I want to honestly, like, there's part of me that wants to run a preaching Sunday, kind of like an Office series, where like you say something and then it just the camera pans over to one of my children giving like a Jim Halpert expression.
Yes,
like,
oh, that'd be awesome.
And then it comes back to me, and, you know, which of course I think then makes me the Michael Scott of the room. But oh well.
Here, and I'll throw this one more sports reference in, and this is going to segue. I got this great segue into what we're actually going to talk about today. But I've been watching The Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls documentary, because I grew up watching the Bulls, loving the Bulls, loving Jordan, watching this like story of this Bulls like six championship team and the 2 3-peats and all this stuff, and it's great. And so last week it was about the Bulls trying to overcome the bad boys of the Detroit Pistons. With Isaiah Thomas
going all bonkers.
And I'm watching this and I'm like, Bill Laimbeer. I hated Bill Laimbeer. And so it made me, they showed like clips of, you know, Jordan would drive to the basket and he would just get decked.
Yeah.
Scottie Pippen would go to the basket and he'd just get just mauled.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people who felt like Laimbeer was playing a little dirty.
They were all playing all of them. Because Rodman was on that team too.
Oh, that's right. He was a Piston at that time. That's right.
He got drafted by the Pistons.
Yeah.
So
I remember him, like, when I really started getting into basketball, he was already part of the Bulls.
Yeah.
And it was, you had Pippen, Rodman, Jordan,
Yeah,
it was someone else. I'm forgetting the name suddenly. Well, I'm blanking on it. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Like, there was that run that the Bulls made where there was like three or four of those core people. They were just
really just good.
The machine.
So this kind of segues into what we're talking about today. I feel like as we, because now there's more talk of states reopening.
Mm-hmm.
At least in faith, you know,
which, as we all know, is because Kenny Copeland blew the wind of God into the atmosphere, burning this thing.
Exactly.
So thank you, Kenny C.
I think he more blew
Papa Kenneth.
I think he more blew COVID everywhere. But so states are going to start reopening in phases, which as it should be. You know, you don't want to just jump all right back in and things like that, because you know there's still the virus is still spreading, and so. I feel like we're going to come to this point now when things start reopening where it's like the Bulls versus the Pistons. You're going to have the people who are all about reopening as the Bulls. And then you got the people who are not about reopening as the Pistons. And they're going to be
maybe
like
some elbows flying.
The people who are all the Bulls like, let's go, let's get out of this house. And here come the Pistons just boom, just nailing you on the floor. And so now my question is, how is the church and how as church leaders do we handle that kind of interesting dynamic that is definitely going to come up? It may not come up necessarily within our own church families. It could.
Yeah.
It may not. But it's going to happen in our own communities. And how do we wrestle with that as church people?
So it's interesting because I was following a session with Will Mancini, who writes a book. He wrote a book several years ago called Church Unique. And it's all about, you know, kind of the helping churches. He runs a consultancy agency called Exano now. And it's all about helping churches and church leaders kind of position themselves within their community, within their local kind of fabric to just work at their strengths, right? To be aware of their weaknesses and kind of shore those up, but also just work in their strengths, right? So he's been, of course, following this whole thing and following churches that are both, you know, you know, trying to work within state regulation, trying to push for openings to other churches that are ready to be like, hey, we're just going to wait this thing out until it's completely clear, right? So, like, he's been following all of them. And he had an interesting thing because he said that basically the way he terms it is that the reopening decision is going to be around what he terms as five gates and three domains. The five gates being gatherings of 10, 25, 50, 100, and 250.
That's what I'm seeing.
And then the domains, the spaces being the virtual space, the home space, and the church space. And so it was an interesting discussion because, of course, it leads a lot of us to the conversation of, like, what are the things that we've started because of this that we actually need to keep going?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that's where a lot of people are like, hey, you know, most churches, I think, transition to some form of online service, you know, which actually, you know, if you were a church that didn't do that before, that was a space that you weren't really accessing or connected to or maybe even invited into. So in one sense, like, hey, this is the space that you now have an open door with, you know, what are you going to do to keep going? But I think the other one is, it's a really interesting thing. I was talking with my dad because, you know, he's got a smaller church. It's like, you know, it's like, I think 35 or so, you know, it's a smaller Lutheran church, mostly older folks. You know, and they're in that place right now where they're trying to figure out how to do communion in person. Because that's really important
to their question.
Yeah, like for their practice of faith, communion is not just something that you kind of like pop a Cheeto and some apple juice while you're laying in bed, right? Like it's that would not be the same. It's not the same representation. It's not the same spiritual practice, right? So there's a lot of theology and doctrine that go into that. It's not just because they're being legalistic. It's because this is how they believe God is expressing grace and presence in this moment. At the same time, like, they're wanting to work for it because, again, they do have an older congregation. So they're wanting to make sure they're staying well within safety regulations, safety parameters. So, like, right now, it's, you know, they're going to probably do something like, you know, open up communion. So they're probably doing an online service. And then following that, communion will be available, like, at the door of the church from X hour to X hour, right, where people can come in one by one. Okay. You know, you get a prayer. So, you know, he'll be there. Everybody can be, you know, kind of safe distance. But, like, there can be a presence. There can be a table. There can be a shared body and, you know, wine. Anyway, it's an interesting kind of thing because I feel like that's kind of our discussion right now is, like, you know, we've got a larger church.
Yeah.
let's say, you know, in Massachusetts, you're supposed to, you know, you're kind of gearing for like May 4th, and now it's been extended to May 18th.
Yeah.
But part of that conversation has been one of like, let's say May 4th or even May 18th, everything kind of, all right, we're good, everything opens. You know it's going to be a slow opening. You know it's going to be staged. Yeah, and you know, like, for us, like, you know, for us to put our church in groups of 10 or 25, like, you're looking at the longest day ever.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, it'd be very difficult for us. So, like, we're in that place of trying to figure out, like, okay, even if we reopen, until, at what point do we need to wait and just keep doing online services until it hits this specific number, right? Like, so we might have to wait. Yeah, we might actually have to wait until it gets to groups of 50 or, you know, 50 or, you know, that kind of thing. Because, like, for us to do church with, like, groups of 25, I'm not sure it's feasible.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, we have a smaller church, as I mentioned before. And so I've just sent an email to all our elders today, and I said, look, here's what I'm seeing moving forward whenever things start slowly opening back up. And I said, if... You know, I would think like Governor Baker, you know, this governor of Massachusetts, if he says, you know, things can start opening back up May 18th, you know, at least non-essentials. And if he says groups of 25 or less can meet. Mm-hmm. For our church, I would say, well, we need to do two services. We need to do a 9:30 and an 11.
Right.
They'll both be small services, like small attended services. And I said, our kids' stuff, like Sunday school and everything else, will only be at the 11 o'clock. Because I figure, like, families, it's going to take them a little bit longer to get their kids ready and all that stuff. 9:30, both services will be exactly the same.
Right.
Same stuff, same elements, because we want to make sure, like, we're going to do this until groups of 50 or more can meet.
Now,
then we'll come together. And, like, about communion, you know, I know another podcast we made fun of the prepackaged, like, communion things.
But there's a point to it right now.
There's going to be a boom. So, because somebody mentioned that, and I was like, you know what? I made fun of that.
Yeah.
But you know what? Right now, and probably not, there's probably going to be a boom in that company, whoever does those. They're going to be a high order for those, because I think churches are going to be like, you know what? We want to make sure that we are able to observe communion, but also stay safe.
Yep. And that's where having kind of the isolated, completely, like, you know, hygienically sealed wafer thing is like, it actually makes complete sense now. So. I found it interesting. My sister was saying their church is looking to reopen, and what they're looking at doing is groups of 10, right? So services with groups of 10, but you have to register in order to attend.
Oh, we talked about, my wife and I talked about that too, like registering.
You know, which I think is, it's like, it's going to be an interesting dynamic, because even that then makes it to where, you know, how do new people come and find, because like if they don't have that, like, this is how we find you, and what do you do if a new person arrives? Like, so like, there's going to be some legit, that's why, like, for our church, we're kind of in that discussion of like, all right, you know, we may end up waiting past the 10, 25, 50 stage, because it may just not be practical, you know, for us to try to manage all of the logistics of our own congregation while also trying to keep space for potential newcomers. Because for us, it's also a little bit more like a little different because we're in our new building. So we've got a new building that we have yet to actually worship in, that once we actually want to open up, you know, there's going to be people who are going to go, oh, what's this thing? Let's come check it out. Just
and
we're
on
new.
And we're on the main drag.
So it's like, you know, there have been people in the community seeing this thing get built, seeing this thing get, you know, kind of renovated out.
Curious.
And they're going to just stop. So it's a fascinating kind of thing. But yeah, I think for me, I think the question is just simply like, I like, you know, Mancini's way of kind of pushing it by gates of like, okay, which gate is the one that you're actually trying to kind of to run through, right? Like, you know, which one are you trying to funnel things through? And I think that for me, not this is like an official stance for our church or anything, but just my personal gut would be weighted out from the 10 to 25, at least, you know, just given our situation. Yeah. Like, I think that would be really hard to try to manage.
Because you're a larger church. Than
and I mean, just even kids, you know, like if you bring your kids, like, so basically, like, you know, you get two families. Let's say you have two or three families. They each have a couple of kids, right? So you have like, you know, three families of four, five show up, and there's 15 people. Yeah. That's not including staff.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Or ministry volunteers. Yeah. And that's the problem. It's like, so for us, like, you know, we have a church of, you know, around 300 something in attendance and, you know, X amount on paper, right? But that means that's a lot of services to run if you're only bringing in three families at a time.
Yeah.
So for us, I think it probably will. My guess is that we will lean more towards the, you know, the larger gates. But I am also kind of evaluating the idea of like the spaces, the domains of what are the things that we've done and implemented now that we're going to keep doing just because it allows us that extra way to contact people. It gives us that extra foot. And I think that's where we're looking at our online to go, okay, what do we want to keep with our online services? Yeah. What do we want to revamp?
So I think it's right now, it's like churches moving forward, we have to consider optics. We have to consider how the outside world is viewing us and how we respond. If we just go into we're open and fully back up and all this stuff when not everybody else is fully open back up, the optics that you're going to have in your community are not good.
Correct.
They're not, it's not going to be perceived well. And I think like for us, we've canceled VBS for this year. And that's that's hard for us because... And the thing is, here was my reasoning, and I already kind of ran it by a couple of our children's ministry person and our VBS person and one of my elders who's heavily involved in VBS. And I said, look, here's what I'm thinking. There's no way we can do it in June like we usually do.
Right.
Absolutely no way. July, it may not even still be fully opened quite yet. I hope so. I would think so, but may not be. And August... If we're fully open in July and August, there's no one going to be around.
No, everyone will be doing all the stuff they couldn't do for the past 4 or 5 months.
And I said, there is absolutely no point in trying to put all this effort and even money into something that's probably not going to be well attended because even if people are not gone, they're going to still be a little gun-shy to be to put their kids into a large group gathering like that.
There are still schools in our area, like not like Westford itself, but like just within the state and within New England, that have already looked at and talked about the idea of canceling the first semester of regular school just because they're concerned that even if things open up over the course of the summer, that there might be parents who are hesitant to put their kids back into large... So in other words, like that's where this kind of stuff shapes the... It shapes the mental and social thinking, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's where I feel like that's where churches need to be really aware of that kind of thing, too. Of like,
we need to be
even if things
that.
Open up, it's a lot, like you just said, a lot of it has to do with perception. It has to do with people's readiness to jump back into certain things and their willingness to kind of try to resume what we would term as normal life. But they might actually now view this much more differently, right? Like, so I think that's part of it as well. It's worth the discussion, like, because, you know, what I view as a normal life is actually quite different maybe from someone who looks at this and goes, I'm actually more comfortable living this way. So I don't know, there's gonna be a lot of different elements and different changes. I know we're doing our VBS online, which I have no idea yet how that's gonna look or work. And frankly, I believe I'm kayaking while it's happening. So hopefully someone figures that out fast. And
I mean, we're going to replace our VBS with like a children's church during the summer. Like we usually don't do any kind of children's Sunday school or anything during the summer because we want to have the time available for people and just enjoy summer. But we're going to replace VBS. We're going to use like old VBS curriculum, programs we've done and just kind of make our own like children's church curriculum. And then we might do like a back to school bash in the fall, like in September. Like get a bouncy house, maybe do a local park up the road from us,
and just kind
of big party type of thing. We got a friend who's a DJ. I bet if I asked him, like, hey, can you come DJ this and that?
I'm thinking the fall. The fall is gonna be a good block party season. Like it's gonna be, you know,
people want to be out.
Hopefully, people want to get together and be ready to kind of, you know, celebrate together. But I know that's part of what we're looking at too. Is like we're gonna do it. We're gonna basically just host it online because then you can control it. You can control who attends. You can control who shows up. You don't have to worry about, like, you know, random people not signing up and then showing up that day like, oh, yeah, we never did the sign-up stuff, but here's our kid, you know, and then leave, you know. Like, like the stuff that you just can't, you know, like, normally you can kind of make those adjustments and even have expectation that something like that might happen. But in this particular case, you just don't know and you don't want to put someone in a position where, you know, there's a risk or there's a concern or there's just simply not a prepared moment or a prepared person for that. So we're going to transition, I think, most of that stuff online this year. But again, it's an odd thing to have to do.
Yeah. And I think we're going to have to still wrestle with this the rest of the year, like with people's fears and people's anxieties. And I think as church leaders, we can't just, I think we have to address them and we have to just continue to point to Christ and faith in Christ and trust in Christ and not let irrational fear and anxiety overtake us and things like that. Because you know that that's kind of what's going on in the world right now with those who are responding to this, some who are responding to this, not everybody, but some who are responding to this with this, you know, kind of irrational fear and irrational anxiety about it, and just let it control them. And we need to point them to the hope we have in Christ and say, hey, this is who can alleviate your fears.
Right.
This is, I mean, you're still going to wrestle with it, but he can take it off your shoulders, you know, and he can help you with it and help you through that. And I think we're going to have to address that. And I'm even addressing it in series right now we're doing on it for our virtual services, you know, and just looking at how Jesus interacted with people and what he did and how he changed people. And just by the way, he was just another human being to a human being, even though he's God too, you know, he's still human. And I think that's what we have to be sensitive of, that, you know, if somebody doesn't want to come back to church right away, we can't judge them and say, well, they're just living in fear and not in faith. We need to say, all right, how can we help you make those steps to being part of the community again? And if they say, I'm just not ready, give me a few weeks.
Right.
Give me a month. Let me just wait till the fall.
Yep.
Then we need to say, yeah, okay, we'll pray for you. And whatever you need, we'll be there for you. And we'll still stay connected with you and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, just do our best to maintain a positive perception within our own communities, because if we don't, if we just do this the wrong way, because there are a lot of people looking at churches nowadays, and if we do this the wrong way, that could ruin a witness for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the part of this I think that's most important, is that you know, it's on the best of days to be, you know, a church comes with a lot of scrutiny.
Yep.
And a lot of resistance from folks who either just simply don't believe what you're living or what you're telling or what you believe, and to people who are actually very distrustful or very cautious or possibly even openly antagonistic against the church because of past failures, past hurts, past wrongs, past whatever. Right. So it's just one of those things where, you know, the more that we can do to alleviate, you know, those fears, the more that we can do to build bridges, to demonstrate our willingness, our humility, frankly, right? Like, I think that's one of the key pieces here. It's like, and again, that's one of those balancing parts for followers of Jesus, right? Is to, you know, which I myself have to constantly remind myself, is like, I'm not here only to be worried in this time about my civil liberties or my rights or my freedoms or my fear or my whatever. That I actually also carry, you know, the representation of the kingdom of God, which is about speaking to things and oftentimes humbly, graciously giving, sacrificially even giving up certain things in order to better promote the message of Christ and the gospel of Jesus. So, yeah, it's an interesting time. It continues. We continue through it. This too shall pass. Or it's a very Battlestar Galactica. It's happened before and it'll happen again. And so say we all.
This is the way.
This is the way. There's going to be so many epic things that come out of this. We're actually watching all of Community right now.
Oh, nice.
My children, obviously they've never seen it because it was too old for them. And, you know, it was one of those kind of things where we were sitting going like, all right, what would be a fun show to watch since we have more family time? Like, we have a lot of family time in general. Yeah. Like, we've always made sure to have family time. But right now we have just more because my, you know, the girls don't have any extracurriculars. I don't have my usual meetings that I have to go run around for. Becky doesn't have her usual meetings and shit. So we're like, let's find a show. So first we had initially started with The Mandalorian because it's just amazing.
Yes, obviously.
But that was kind of pre everything here, right? That kind of wrapped up as this stuff was settling in. So we were like, what's a good just show? And we were like, Community is an excellent show. I'm assuming you've seen it.
I did. Yeah.
You know, but it's like, it's one of those kind of shows because it actually stands up really well considering that it's starting to be, you know, almost 10 years old in some places. I know. You start realizing when this thing came out and you start realizing like they were still using flip phones because they didn't have smartphones yet. Right.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Right. Or Blackberries. Like, you know, a lot of times the Blackberry was the most popular kind of phone. Right. Anyway, it's one of those things where you start realizing, like, but it's themes and it's way of dealing with stuff. But more importantly, the characters are just good, well-written characters. And so my kids are loving it. So
Allie and I are rewatching Parks and Rec.
Oh, and see, that's a great one, too. Kind of thing. We're just really good characters.
And then
excellent
it makes
story.
Me wonder, how would Ron Swanson deal with quarantine? He'd probably be perfectly happy. He'd be perfectly fine with it.
His libertarian nature would be finally like, finally I'm being left alone to do what I do.
To his house in the woods.
Yes.
And do his woodworking.
Yes. And be left alone. As long as he didn't run out of good bourbon, he'd be all right.
And as long as Tammy 1 or 2
come here. May Tammy 1 or 2 never visit upon any of us. So. All right, we got to wrap it up for today. This has been good. Stay safe and healthy, everyone. And we will catch you hopefully next week.
See ya.